Does anybody have any questions to start off a discussion? Yeah.
Well, when you speak of visualize this absence of law happening immediately, and for instance, you mentioned Stephen, I can't remember his second name, who was wrongly convicted of a child sexual murder. If this should happen as an example in a social society, how would it be dealt with? Obviously, if you're fostering the idea that these things couldn't possibly happen in a social society, they wouldn't have to be dealt with, we'd have to have any mechanism. But assuming that some of these things may happen, accepting as socialism progresses, there'd be probably less of them. But assuming that there would be some, how would society deal with it? I mean, could it be done in some sort of ad hoc manner, or would it have to be done in a formal way? I mean, could the antisocial people be allowed to run around at will? I mean, these are real practical problems.
Well, I don't have an enormous knowledge about that guy. I think his name's Kiskos, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kiskos, something like that, yeah. Except that what I do know indicates that he was an example of somebody who was very seriously alienated from the requirements of capitalist society. He didn't come up to anywhere near the prevalent idea of what is an ideal person. His family didn't, his background didn't. And it's very difficult to know where people like that begin, because he was educationally not achieving very highly, and yet he had a few other problems as well. One thing we can be sure of is that somebody in that condition is not dealt with in a constructive way in a society. And this was why the police picked on the guy. He was a loser, he was a victim, and so it was very easy. He was an unpopular person, so it was very easy to pin this offence on him, because nobody was going to stand up and defend this bloke, and even his own defence, legal defence, weren't too interested in it. So, and capitalist society is full of these people, and it's very difficult to say exactly where they begin. We very often see where they end, but what we do know is that they don't fit in with this ideal, and they react in that particular way. So I don't think there will be people exactly like him. We can't deny it, I suppose, the fact that there will be people in socialist society who will act in what you describe as an antisocial way. But they have got to be people who do have quite severe problems. They've got to be people we can say that they'll be ill, and society will deal with them as ill people. If necessary, yeah, they would have to be restrained. And we will deal with them as people needing restraint, and then for their problems to be dealt with. What we won't do is to prosecute them. They won't be regarded as people who are offending against society and have to be restrained and punished. They will be dealt with in the same way as socialism will deal with all its other problems. It will deal with problems of natural disasters in exactly the same way. But it's a very interesting point of discussion.
I think somebody at the back.
I was going to ask a very similar question to the first speaker, and I was also going to say that the code or the way of dealing with people in a socialist society who have committed murder, for example, there would obviously we would regard them as being needing treatment of some kind. And surely, if you have a code or a way of dealing with that, that in a sense, you may not use the word law, but that in a sense would be the equivalent. I'm not comparing it with the law today at all, but that isn't a law in another sense, isn't it? That way of the society of dealing with those people. So you could say, well, that is, in fact, a law, and you wouldn't use that term.
Well, it's not just a matter of semantics. I mean, the law does have a particular context. A law is there on statute, and certain acts are forbidden, and there is a machinery for dealing with them. Socialism will deal with the situation as it is, and it will have what I call its own morality. It will be a morality of cooperation. And it will deal with people who don't. Let's put it this way. Look, I mean, I talked about the industry of the legal profession, didn't I? Now, that's an enormously wasteful industry. And when we look around us, we can see that there's a huge amount of waste in capitalist society. But society accepts that and gets along with it and is still pretty productive and still develops. So in socialist society, that waste won't exist. From that point of view, society will be a lot more efficient in all ways. So when it's confronted with minor problems, like people behaving in an antisocial way, then it will deal with them in the appropriate way at the time. If necessary, it would restrain them, and if it would treat them as people who need to be helped, need perhaps to be treated. But it would do that without any formal regulations, if you like to say. It would do that without any formal machinery for dealing with them, a formal machinery of the state, a police, a prosecution system, courts to judge whether they did it or not. Because if you talk about laws, then you've got to have a system in which you have to judge whether the person's done it or not. If they deny it, you then get involved in this enormous machinery as we have today, a legal machinery in which one person argues one side of the case and another person argues the other. Perhaps neither of them saying things which they know to be true. Now that sort of thing won't exist in socialist society, but obviously any human society acts on certain presumptions, and the presumptions of socialist society will be that human beings cooperate, and that's the way it will deal with all its problems.
Steve?
I don't agree with the assumption that antisocial behaviour should become, in the best of all possible worlds, still behave like it. Well, they've got to be ill. They've got to be crazy. Because I think there's a big problem here, and that is that more damage has been done to human beings in the 20th century in the cause of treatment than in the cause of punishment. And in fact, treatment is the dominant form of punishment in liberal capitalist societies. So I think it's a mistaken view. I also think that if you medicalize antisocial behavior, the assumption is that you then take away the judicial procedures which allow people to defend themselves. And of course, rightly so, if you're dealing with people who are lunatics, you say, well, we're sane, we recognize what the social expectations are, you're insane. It would be an act of an uncaring act on our part to even allow you to defend yourself. You'll only incriminate yourself more, you'll only make yourself become more foolish. Therefore, we don't even want to hear what you want to say. We are just going to pursue this form of treatment. I think it's the wrong answer that Ralph has given. And I think it's the wrong answer that is often given. I think you've got to say two or three things. One, that the number of such cases of antisocial behaviour are going to rapidly diminish, probably beyond the kind of expectations that most people have now, certainly beyond the expectations that both in his question and in previous discussions with him, Frank Simpkins over there has expressed. I mean, I think this is just carrying the expectations of capitalist behaviour into socialism. I think it's an expectation of socialism being simply an economic transformation of society and not a cultural transformation of society. Therefore, the assumption is that although people will recognise that common ownership means that you don't eat all the food and let the children starve, it will mean that if you take free access to meat, your right to rape people. I don't think any of those cultural traits are going to survive in any reasonable expectation to think that they're going to survive into socialist society, because that might be called a utopian cop-out. Well, what I'm saying is it won't happen, therefore we don't have to think about it. I'm not saying we don't have to think about it, but I am saying it won't happen. I am saying that I don't think in a socialist society it's reasonable to create problems in our expectations, which are not going to be there within the material reality. But the second thing I say is that where antisocial behaviour occurs that people can't put up with, it is extremely important that we recognise the distinction between law, which must be abolished, and judicial procedures which allow people a fair hearing. That, to me, is a paramount element within democracy. And I would want that in a socialist society. And if a socialist society decided to respond to my antisocial behaviour in a particular respect, I would want to be able to do two things. To say, A, what you are saying is false, and I can prove it, and I would want not as much right to prove it as I have with the best lawyers and the greatest amount of money under capitalism, but more of a right. And I would also want the opportunity to say, well, actually, I did it, but I want you to, as a society, look at it this way and think about it this way. I think that the notion that that kind of thing shouldn't exist, I mean, that actually strains into a more dangerous sort of utopianism. And the assumption that there are not going to be arguments, there are not going to be different, that the individual is going to be so integrated into society that if society says to someone like me, we think that for the good of what was in a particular case of literature called the good of the nation, but for the good of the world socialist society, we think you need a bit of medical treatment, old chap. But come back and see us in 10 years' time, and we're sure that your place on the biscuit production line will be fine. I'm not interested in that particular option. I want to argue as much as I can, particularly if I don't think that I am done. And the third response I would make, which I think is awakening the medical non-option, I think dangerous option, is this, to say the point about capitalist society is it conceives of problems, antisocial problems, in terms of punishment. Punishment belongs to the whole kind of Judeo-Christian thing about blame, attacking people because they had you been guilty about making people guilty, and so on. The fact of the matter is that what we have at the moment is a society which is not a society. We have a society in the sense that we can only live by being interdependent and cooperative, in one sense. But it's not a society because it is constantly urging us not to actually recognise our interdependence and cooperative abilities. Now, in a socialist society, which will be, by its very character, a society of interrelationship and conscious interrelationship, and that is the key word, conscious interrelationship, in other words, an awareness that people are interrelated, then I think it's not simply the question of what happens to the person who commits the antisocial behaviour, but the rights of the rest of society. And the rights of the rest of society may well be to say, look, we produce all of the food of society. But frankly, if your behaviour is such that, and this really harks back to the first talk of the day, if your behaviour is such that you're really upsetting people and annoying people, we don't want to eat with you. We don't want to share our dwellings with you. We don't want to be involved in entertainment where you're present. I mean, this is in social anthropology a common and effective form of telling people that you don't like certain things. You remove yourself. If enough people remove themselves from you, you start to get the message. I don't think that this is an unreasonable context within which to think about how to solve problems of antisocial behaviour in a socialist society. In other words, you don't imprison a person, because imprisoning a person, pulling them away from society, and incidentally forcing members of society to then become prison guards, and I don't believe that the moment you have your first socialist prison guard, however well reasoned incidentally the argument for a prison guard, however much it is constructed within the terms of democracy and compatibility with socialism, there's one thing you've left out of account in that scenario, and that is that prison guard will be a prison guard with a socialist conscience and an awareness of society, and will be she will be involved in free access and love for other people and all the rest of it for 5 minutes. And on the second day of that job, they will be an authoritarian bastard. Because of being a prison guard is not a neutral occupation. And you couldn't do it without that happening. That is the nature of these institutions. Therefore, instead of imprisoning the wrongdoer and thereby imprisoning other members of society who have to be part of prison, you do the other thing. Society removes itself from those people. Always going back to the second point of saying, let those people have the maximum opportunity, if necessarily with informal arrangements, of defending, explaining, expressing remorse, and so on. And also within the context of the first point that I suggested, which is you don't ever, in my view, in a socialist society, I think the very notion of talking about any person being so ill that they are incapable of being part of society, I just don't think it's for 1 minute acceptable. I think it's actually a spin-off of eugenics. And I think that if you start to talk about these people who are only ever criminal because there's something wrong with their mind, then you've got a big problem in terms of Marxist theory, because the mind is a social phenomenon, as we all know, which only exists within the context of the environment within which it lives. Therefore, if there's something wrong with a person's mind, the best thing to do within the context of punishment would be to punish society, not to punish the individual. So I don't think illness is the answer. Now, having said, I don't know whether Ralph really holds that view about illness, or whether it is a sort of a euphemism for not wanting a legal solution, which I don't want. I don't want a society law at all. But I would rather live, actually, in a society where I could go to a court, employ a lawyer, or get legal aid, than be in a society run by psychiatrists, who are the most pernicious and evil people that modern culture has created.
Slightly related to some of those points, but perhaps experience. So this is part question, part statement. What's intriguing me about this is the concept or concepts, the nest of concepts of human nature that exist in capitalism. And they seem to me to be very important to this whole business of upholding the law. For example, if I get out of the nitty-gritty, it's only possible to be a policeman and to work effectively if you've got a concept of human nature which will allow you to do your job. You therefore have to divide human beings into people and toe-racks if you're a policeman. You talk socially, you mix with policemen, and you will find that comes out in the first 5 minutes. They will suss people up, they will always find them watching you, and they will have you in one of those two categories. He's a person, that's a toe-rack. And a toe-rack, you can do anything. And this is quite interesting, it seems to me, in that it bears upon the talk that Karima was giving this morning about the indigenous populations. If you're walking in the African forests where the pygmies are, but
Congo, Cameroon,
Congo basis. That's right. Yes, I'm getting mixed up between the Amazon basin and the Congo basin. You come across a woodland path, and the pygmies are saying, don't come across. Who don't come across? On people don't come across, like Negroes. They have the people and Torah attitudes. That's to say, who's in and who's out. So it's not purely a civilized thing. This has been going on a long, long time. And you will find, if you look at society papers like Queen, for example, when it talks about people, who's people? Even people like us. We're people, them. So I think the concepts of what constitutes a person is very important in this question of law and criminalisation. But the point I really want to get round to and really ask a question about is, it has struck me as an impression. For example, in going into a prison and the prison officer said, well, you know, this lot of inadequates. I said, well, what do you mean by inadequates? Oh, well, he left his wife and then got hauled up before the court and he was supposed to pay alimony and he didn't, and he lost his job and he couldn't pay the fines so eventually he finishes up here. Now, that's Category D prison, you see, which is almost full of inadequates, according to capitalism. And that they become criminals. And it seems to me that one of the things about them, this is what the question I'm asking, is that what they can't handle is not life. They're not with life all right, but they couldn't handle the capitalism. And we've had members in this party, I won't name any names, but at one level, extremely charming people, very kind, their friends and so on, very generous, but always in trouble with the law. What they can't handle, what they can't handle is property relations. If they feel like a fag, and they haven't got a fag, they'll pass by a boob and pick a fag up. Which seems to me to be an eminently sensible way to behave at one level, of course, it comes from. Now, is that simply my impression? That some of these people wouldn't have a moment's trouble in a socialist society. And it's only capitalism they come. Or am I fantasizing a bit?
I'm
seeing people who get in trouble with the law, that's all.
Well, I did indicate that when I used the word alienation. The prison officer used the term inadequate. He must have been on a training course recently. I don't usually have such subtle attitudes. But it's absolutely true, and this is continually publicised, isn't it? They could. There was a governor of Pentonville once who said, if I opened the gates here, half of the prisoners would not walk out, because life in Pentonville is a lot better than life out in the Caledonian Road. And that was a sort of, perhaps, a slight overstatement of reality. It is. Quite a lot of people find going to prison a relief. They can't hang capitalism to such an extent that they find it really quite a relief to go to somewhere where they're told what to do from the moment they get up in the morning to the moment they go to bed at night. And no other decisions have to be taken. They don't have any of the other problems of being a member of the working class and coming out and handling things. They don't have the problem of nicking fags as they go past a tobacconist, and they have a completely different sort of attitude towards the immediate everyday living. So, it is absolutely true that prisons are full of this sort of person. Occasionally this is publicised, and then people begin to question the function of prisons, but it never develops, because when those people come before courts, of course, the courts don't look at it in that. They say you've offended against the law, and you've stolen so many packets of cigarettes. I came across a bloke recently who was imprisoned in Iraq and tortured, and came to this country as a political refugee, and because of his circumstances here and his concern about his family in Iraq, he got into using drugs, and so he steals in order to buy drugs. So he continued, he steals, he goes to supermarkets, he sort of blitzes like King Street Hammersmith, and if he's lucky that day, he gets away with the blitz. If he's unlucky, he gets picked up on the fourth or fifth shot, and eventually courts run out of patience with him, so he's sent to prison. And this is a guy who can't hand, and who can blame him, who can ask. I mean, this is sort of impinged a bit on what Steve was saying, that I'll come to later on, but who can criticise or be surprised at somebody who can't handle that type of experience and react in that way? People can't deal with capitalism. It's not a society that answers our needs, and I think it's, in a way, it's a much healthier reaction to the conditions of capitalism than to accept it and to be compliant to it. People who behave like that are far more damaged, and in prison as well, the healthier prisoners are those who resist it resist the regime in some sort of way. The unhealthiest prisoners, the people who do like to go out, the people who don't walk out of Pentonville if they open the gates, are the people who accept the regime and find actual comfort there.
Sunday.
I was
sort
of quite agreeing with largely Derek, but the point that Steve made that it'd been very dangerous indeed to I remember when I did a year of philosophy at university, one of the questions I was asked in the end of year exams, there was a quote given, criminals are sick, they should be sent to hospital, not to prison. Well, for some reason, this immensely irritated me on that particular day. I went right over the top in my answer to it. I said it was a load of rubbish, it was an insult to the dignity of man, as I put it at the time, and so on. But I think that was essentially right. I mean, I should perhaps have controlled my emotions a bit in answer to the question. But and there's another rather strange example I would like to give you. I think I've given this in a meeting before. One of the Russian authors in the last century wrote a story, and it was adapted as a radio four play. I don't know whether the original name of the story was retained in the play, but the play was called Men Not Sparrows. And basically it was about these serfs on a farm which had had the misfortune to be sold to a, quote, liberal owner. And he said he was going to reform the forms of punishment. So that instead of whipping them when they did wrong, when they offended against the sort of rules of the farm, he tied them to a thread. He tied a thread around them and tied it to this post or whatever, and forbade them to go, you know, to go anywhere beyond the restrictions of the thread. And they felt immensely insulted by this. They would have preferred the whipping, because at least they would have been being treated like human beings, rather than like some sort of bird or animal that had needed to be tied up. And, you know, that's hardly the sort of end of the story, but the point that was being made is right, that to treat people in that kind of patronising way, which is involved in this idea of medical treatment for antisocial behaviour, is just not the answer. You've at least got to assume that they have some responsibility for their actions, or are capable of realising that if they've committed an antisocial act, that's what they've done and what they're going to do about it. And it brings me on to what Ralph was saying about treating problems like this in much the same way as you would treat natural disasters. Now, he didn't go into that, and it might sound to some people like a bit of an oversimplification, but that's also a point that's worth making. Socialism is going to have problems to deal with, and there will be various types of problems. But there is no reason why, you know, an explosion in a factory, a road accident, and some kind of antisocial behaviour cannot all be broadly dealt with in the same way. That's to say, you find out what happened and who was involved, and you see what can be done about it. That's those are the broad principles, and you don't need to talk about law in this circumstance any more than you need to talk about law when it comes to the principles of democratic procedure. These things are pretty well understood by most people. We can have arguments about them and how they apply in particular circumstances, but none of us need to, you know, look up a bloody law book to say, right, well, according to the laws of democratic procedure, this is what you do. You can talk about rules of democratic procedure, principles of democratic procedure. Why do we need to use the word law? Why do we need to assume that people have got to be put on trial? I mean, after all, a legal trial is little better than a trial by ordeal in a kind of sophisticated form. That's really what it is. And we want to get past that in our dealings with human beings and with the problems that come up. You've got to assume in the first instance that people are pretty well responsible, some degree or other, for the actions that they take. And if they take actions which offend against other people, then you've got to try and find out as much about that as possible. And the big mistake that's made by people when they talk about law is, of course, this idea that the law is human and that it should be a separate sort of course in society, apart from the normal decision-making procedures. I don't see that that's necessary at all. You can have specialised mechanisms for dealing with particular problems without having to consider them as being apart from and somehow, way up in space, higher than the normal decision-making procedures. And it's not so much a question of neutrality. I mean, money is neutral. The law as we have it at the moment pretends to be neutral, which is certainly another way of saying different at the very best. But what the concept of fairness is the far more important one for socialists, it seems to me. So I think we can quite realistically talk about a society without law, which is, however, an ordered society, which can have broad principles and specific procedures where necessary. And, well, it may be necessary to restrict from people's liberty in some form or other, but you would still do it within as humane a situation as possible and giving the people concerned the permanent right to argue with you about it. It's, you've got to assume that unless there is overwhelming evidence to the contrary, most people know what they're doing most of the time. And that all of us can be in situations where we lose the kind of normal control of it. Well, that doesn't mean that we'll become ill. It simply means that a temporary imbalance is set in and we put it like that.
I make it just gone 10 to 1. I think we'll have to finish quite promptly at 1 because I assume the food will be ready then. Okay, Cliff.
Yeah, I want to talk about a very important area of guilt and shame. It's been touched upon. And because I've had some notions before about if people won't contribute in a social society towards the common work ethic or whatever, what we need to do is shame them and make them feel guilty and to contribute. And I think this is maybe a lack of understanding of human nature. And the recognition that it's part of the human condition to want to contribute and to want to belong in the community is a constant. And if they don't make their contribution, to respond to that by looking upon them in a devalued way, shunning them, isolating yourself from them, just increases the distance which they're feeling anyway because they're not contributing in the first place. I think what we need to do is to be even more friendly towards them, still sharing what we have with them, and to look upon them as our social equals and friends. I think there's aspects of so-called guilt tripping which go on now. I think we need to change our behaviour now as socialists and set a sort of like an example. And I myself try not to look upon people who behave in ways which I would rather they didn't behave. I look upon them still as friends and equal. And I think nobody can send anybody else on a guilt trip anyway. I think we send ourselves on a guilt trip because we say, right, I've done something wrong. And I'm responsible for doing it. That's a rational thing to say. And then an irrational thing comes in, and we say, well, I'm a no good for nothing, a devalued person for doing it. And this stems back from the whole original sin concept, which we have to get rid of. We have to start practicing more rational behaviour now, rather than waiting for socialism to come along. We need to say, right, I've done something wrong, committed an anti-social act, and I'm responsible for doing it. Now, how do I not commit that act again? And the whole emphasis is upon proceeding in a positive direction instead of being bogged down with negative guilt, and you think to yourself as a compensation, I feel bad enough about myself. You know, I've committed this sin, but I'm not really a baddie because I feel so remorseful about it and bad and yet that doesn't do anything towards making yourself more competent and more able not to commit the antisocial act again.
I think we've only got 5 minutes. I don't know if Ralph wants to sum up, so if you don't mind, Frank Carl.
I'd just like to say, this sounds so genteel here, why I used to be in your discussions on crime, where you pick up the daily paper to read about drive-by shootings, 16-year-olds with machine guns. And there's a joke now in the United States because there's so many disgruntled workers that are going in and shooting their supervisor, everybody in the room, the post office. So if you see the flag flying at half mast over a post office, you know they're hiring. it's almost novelty here how you would excuse and so on. The prison population is doubling every 7 years. And if capitalism continues for many more years in the United States, I don't know how you would deal with it. It'd be a monumental test with the youngsters growing up today. One man in Washington said not too long ago, if we want to go to the White House, we'll have to go there in an armored car. Because 2 blocks from the White House, there's shootings every night. And this is the state of social disintegration that's going on in the United States. And the number one capitalist country in the world. So, at the end of the line, it boggles the mind, how you would get these victims of capitalism and try and that be brought up from childhood in this rapacious society. How you ever come around, I don't. Steve, we need you over there.
We've got about 3 minutes until lunchtime, so if you don't mind, Frank, unless it's very brief.
Well, I do because agree with you that the party's not facing this issue, like many other issues, seriously. We appear naive and absolutely utopian. But you didn't answer the first question, Ralph, about whether law would be abolished immediately. Self-evidently it couldn't, because, and I know the comrade pointed out how the antisocial behaviour, which is all pervasive, particularly in some countries, or largely pervasive, wouldn't just end just like that. We don't go through a dawn in a social society as a continuation of and maybe we would have to face it. And this antisocial behaviour diminished substantially over decades. It was still that to be faced initially, and even in a fully fledged society, if there's gross antisocial behaviour, although a lot less than now, it would have to be dealt with. And be dealt with in above a form of passion, not ad hoc, that would be done with the pros and cons of evidence.
Okay, well, if you don't mind, I'll stop you there, because I think we all know what you're saying, and the place for discussing that's probably party conference, as it has been before, and I'm sure will be again. So I'd like to ask Ralph if you want to sum up briefly.
I'm sorry, I completely forgot about whether would the law be abolished immediately, or whether there would be this sort of transition period when we would have the law. But I find that quite inconceivable that when socialism is established, society has taken the step of establishing socialism and still keeps courts and prisons and police officers and lawyers going. The point I was trying to make, but Sandy made it in a much more concise way, I made it in a very clumsy way, was that any minorities who do behave in an antisocial way in socialist society would be regarded in much the same way as natural disasters, as the problems which society has to face. If there are people who behave in that way, I wouldn't regard them as any great problem. I would think if they would be a minority, but an extremely small minority, because most of the offences which are committed in society today, and some of them do have some pretty dreadful consequences for other people, don't just come out of the blue. People don't wake up one morning and decide they're going to go out and shoot one or two people and rob a bank. There's a considerable background to it, and that background is rooted in property society. I can't share what I would say call Steve's optimism that socialism will be completely free of people who behave in ways which are seen as antisocial, and I think we'd be very unwise to take that stance. When I use the term treatment, of course, I wasn't talking about what's called treatment today. The fact of the matter is that there is no treatment today, even in these special hospitals like Broadmoor and Ashworth, where they get people who have committed extremely serious offences, and they are supposed to be treated. They're called patients, and they don't have prison uniform and they're looked after by people who are called nurses, the treatment there is simply non-existent. And if they ever emerge into society, they come out in roughly the same state as they went in. When I said treatment, I really did mean treatment. In other words, individuals being, first of all, valued as members of society, and they will be dealt with in the same way as other problems by a society that is cooperative and humane in its approach to these things. I think the problem with the case about having law courts, and Fred made this point as well as Steve, when we're talking about things being judged on evidence, is that if you ever sit in a court of law and listen to evidence, what immediately comes over is that courts, that sort of procedure doesn't get at what you might call truth. It doesn't get at facts. It assesses evidence, and that's an extremely different matter. If we get involved in that sort of thing, then we're going up a very difficult and problem-scattered road. I think that's all I've got to say at the moment, except that I think it would be very unwise to say that socialism is going to be a problem-free society. We don't know exactly why human beings behave in that particular way. What there might be just a very few people in socialist society who would behave in ways which would be seen to be unacceptable. And I think we ought to face that and deal with it as a possible problem.